we have to make the same information available to all. So we will take a recording on the session. We will capture questions, document the answers, and post them on our website. We will also take the chance to host the details of any team looking for partners. And please, after the meeting, send any reminding questions that you have to the RFP IUP address. Do not write directly to Gemini individuals regarding this request for proposals. So the aim of the instrument upgrade program is to invest funds to upgrade existing operational instruments to keep them scientifically competitive and create new instrument capabilities at the observatory. It is of most importance for us to see community-created science-driven instrument upgrade proposals. And in particular, the aim of this proposals conference is to engage all of you in the instrument instrumentation program and in this request for proposals, to communicate and clarify all aspects of the RFP, to place information into context and answer as many questions as possible. So in slide four, we check the structure of this presentation. The nominal time is about 15 minutes, but we are going to ask or request for your questions at the end of each section. So it will probably take longer. And at the end of the presentation, we will still be completing the hour doing this question and answer session. You encourage you to make as many questions as you have. So let me introduce the team, the instrument upgrades team. Scott Clayman, our Associate Director of Development, Stephen Goodsell, the Instrument Program Manager, Karen Gottsick, who is Aura Contracts Officer, Kathy Blog, our Project Specialist, myself, Ruben Diaz, I am the Instrument Program Scientist. We have also Eric Tolestrup, a Senior Program Scientist, Marie Lemoine-Brucerol, who is a Project Scientist and also NIFST Instrument Science Scientist, and John Bassett, our Systems Engineer. So now I would like to make the round virtual table introduction. So please mention your name, your full name, Institute, and please, if you want, briefly tell us what would you like to get from today's conference. So can we go to Jennifer, if you are connected?
Yes, sure. I turned off my video. This is Jennifer Marshall from Texas A&M University. I'm just kind of getting some information about what you all are looking for in this call for proposals.
Thank you. Is Luke Schmidt there too?
Yes, Luke Schmidt from Texas A&M. I'm also just trying to get some information about what the process is to put proposals in.
Thank you. Let's go to the early morning with Andy.
Andy Shaney. Yeah, Andy Shaney from Australian Astronomical Observatory, and just trying to understand what the parameters are for this proposal process, and you know, specifically, you know, what sorts of things we might be able to propose for.
Thank you. Andreas?
Hi, this is Andreas Seifert from the University of Chicago. Basically the same as most of the other people on the line, just trying to find out more details about this call for proposals.
Thank you. Greg? Greg Wade?
My name is Greg Wade from Royal Military College of Canada and Queen's University. And my objective is essentially the same as everyone else's.
Okay. Was Danny Guzman able to connect?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, my name is Danny Guzman from PUC in Santiago, Chile. I'm mostly interested in understanding whether it is possible to propose a new technology for detector engine detector science detectors on existing instruments.
Thank you, Danny. Do we have Dr. Chang from Korea Institute for Advanced Studies? Okay, Brendan. So, Leslie, please.
Les Sadelmeyer from the Hertzberg Institute, well, Hertzberg Astronomy and Astrophysics, National Research Council. We're not allowed to say institute anymore. Basically, just to understand the process and for what items we may be able to propose on. I know there are a couple other people from the institute here as well. Thank you.
So is John connected? John from NRC?
Yeah, this is John Pazder from NRC as well, and wanting to understand more about the process.
Okay, Dennis?
So this is Matthew Knight. I'm not sure if you're looking for Dennis Bodowitz, but I'm representing him from University of Maryland. I'm looking to get the same sorts of questions everybody else is wondering about.
Okay, thank you. And then we have Tom.
This is Tom Barnes, University of Texas at Austin. I'm here as an observer for the Gemini Science and Technology Advisory Committee.
Thank you, Tom. Did I miss someone?
Yeah, this is Alan Smith from Austin Peay State University, and I'll be a broken record. I'm like everybody else looking for what we can do, and I'm actually probably interested in joining a team as opposed to heading up a proposal.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Hi, I'm Jamie Lomax. I'm from the University of Washington, and I'm here for the same reasons as everyone else.
Dimitri Monin here, the National Research Council. Just trying to get a sense of the world process.
Thank you. Anybody else? So we will go ahead in slide 8. We talk about the 2015 request for proposals outcome. The 2015 small project of about $100,000 award went to Professor Popovich and his team from Texas A&M University, including collaborators from the universities of Toronto, Swinburne, Leiden, and Macquarie. K2F2 project is currently upgrading Flamingos 2 by designing and providing two medium band filters for splitting the range from 1.9 to 2.5 microns. And their main science cases are based in high redshift demography and synergies with current and forthcoming surveys. And the proposal also envisioned a variety of other applications that could be done by our Gemini community. And in addition to funding the design, procurement, and testing of the filters, Gemini awarded the team with 10 hours of telescope time to demonstrate the scientific benefits of the new capability. And we expect to be offering this capability in the second semester of 2017. So let's go to the 2016 request for proposals key topics. In slide 10, you can check which are the main instruments that you should read and carefully check are the RFP main document, the proposal form, and we are also providing a sample contract. And if you are, any of you is by chance not familiar with Gemini instruments, you can check them in our instrument fact sheets and then our webpage, public web pages, and you can later request further information through our formal email address. And you also have the interface control documents and specifications in our webpage. So in slide 11, we're going to talk about the scope and the schedule. AURA is soliciting proposals to design, fabricate, assemble, test, deliver, and commission upgrades to its facility instruments. which are Flamingos 2, GMOS North and South, GNEERS, GPI, GSOI, NIFS, and NIRI, and we also include GRACES. Gemini 6 community-created, science-driven instrumentation upgrade proposals that fit within the total available budget and involve minimal to moderate technical risk. The schedule covers about 12 to 24 months after the contract execution date for the tasks to be completed. This depends on the work package. We expect for the longest projects to take no more than 24 months. And the main event in the schedule is that the notice of intents are due by December 2, and the proposals are due by December 16. We expect to be evaluating the proposals in January and start the contract negotiations in February 2017. So do you have any question about the scope and the schedule?
So you list specific instruments that we're allowed to upgrade to. Are you willing to entertain upgrades that feed multiple instruments but don't actually exist in the instrument space, i.e. something that an add-on on or near the tertiary, for example?
So far we have only considered as a possibility GPOL, the Gemini polarization unit, which can eventually feed more than one instrument.
So I think the answer to that, and Andy, is yes. But the goal of this project, of this initiative, is to add additional capabilities to our current facility instruments. So if you do that, if you do something that adds existing new capability to those instruments, then you're good.
Well, that's exactly what we're doing, Scott. So, great. Thank you.
So that would include Altair as well, I assume.
No, we are not talking about AO at this time.
Okay.
But if you, it's a good question. Why not? So if you do have some ideas, talk to us, and we'll see if there's another way to if you have another program for that.
Okay, let's go to slide 12. Gemini has a maximum available budget of $600,000 for the 2016 call. Our baseline plan is to fund two projects, one small of about 100,000, one medium to large of 500. But we welcome proposals for any amount between no funding at all from Gemini up to the total budget of $600,000. The RFP is open to all institutions or companies from Gemini partner nations. It is also open to non-partner country PIs who have significant or relevant experience in using, designing, or building an instrument for Gemini. And you have to have in mind that the contract can be awarded to profit or non-profit organizations or companies as well. And Gemini encourages collaborations. We have, as we mentioned, we have opened a forum for those seeking additional partners to develop a team for this work. So do not hesitate to write us to the formal address with your contact details, your expertise, and what's the upgrade in which you might potentially be interested. So any questions about the budget, about who can apply, or the collaborations?
So your budget, of course, leaves room for proposers to incorporate contributions from their own institution or from their partner institutions. How will that be weighed in the review process if we decide to to contribute labor or some funding to the proposal.
So you're right in the sense that the budget mentioned here is the cost to Gemini. And you know, as Ruben mentioned, we had initially baselined to sort of this 100 and 500K blocks, but we're not sticking to that. So you can apply for anything from 0 to 600. In terms of in-kind contributions, if you provide more value to Gemini than the amount requested, that just goes into the evaluation process, which we'll get to later. In terms of that just adds more value to Gemini, so that would be a plus in your consideration and the consideration. Right, it just means Gemini's getting more for less, which would increase your chances.
Okay, thanks, Scott.
So the short answer is the more you push in, the better your chances.
I would say increase rather than better, but yes. Yeah, I guess price is better, so it's probably the same. But there's a subtle difference in distinction, I think.
Yeah, hi, this is Stephen Goodsell here. I'm just looking at the RFP main document, and there's a paragraph on selection. So two of the considerations is the cost analysis and price analysis in terms of determining the best value selection. So it's a component, but it's not the only component. So up to a limit, I think.
Any other questions? So let's move to slide 13. The proposing team can request up to 10 hours of on-sky telescope time to demonstrate the scientific capability of the upgrade. And the proposer has to describe how the time will be used to achieve this goal, more or less in the same way that you do with the telescope proposal. Do you have any questions regarding the telescope time?
So what's the timeline for that request? Is that between now and when proposal deadline?
It has to be included in the proposal.
That's part of the proposal.
Yeah. I see. Okay, understood.
Okay, let's move to the evaluation and selection section. In slide 15, within the boxes, we have quoted the text of the request for proposals. About the notice of intent, we request the teams to send a notice of intent to the ORA contracts officer, that is Karen. It has to include the synopsis of the proposed project, the point of contact, the list of the key personnel, the project manager and all senior personnel or relevant personnel, and a list of the proposed team member organizations, including subcontractor, collaborators, and mentioning their roles in the project if they are already clear by the time of the notice of intent. The notice of intent are important because ORA will use this to ensure that the reviewers in the evaluation panel have the appropriate expertise and that they do not have any conflicts of interest. Do you have any question about the notice of intent or the evaluation panel?
Can you please remind us of the deadline for NOIs?
It's December 2.
Thank you. Will the notices be published?
No, the notices of intent will not be published. Okay, if there are no more questions, Let's move to slide 16. About the evaluation criteria, the evaluation panel will make recommendations following the scores and the guidelines that are in pages 5 and 6 of the RFP main document. And Gemini will make a best value selection after considering the evaluation panel report, the price and cost analysis if it corresponds, Gemini's ability to support the work, and any additional information in the proposals themselves. And once a team is selected, both parties will enter a period of contract negotiation. And if all differences can be resolved, the agreement will be sent for approval. In the meantime, other proposers will not be notified of the results of this procurement because if for some reason the differences in the contract negotiation cannot be resolved or the agreement is not approved, then we will move to the next team or the next proposal in the selection ranking. Do you have any question about the evaluation and selection?
What do you mean by technical requirements? Technical challenges?
No, the technical requirements that you put in your proposed instrument upgrade.
If they can be sort of satisfied by the observatory, or I'm a little bit puzzled.
Yeah, hi, this is Stephen Goodsell again. Maybe the title's a bit confusing, but if you look at the RFP main document on the bottom of page 5 and the top of page 6, there's a list of items that we would use for guidance under this area. So, for example, it says, is a proposed work technically feasible with an acceptable level of risk and lifetime support from Gemini staff? Second one, has the team demonstrated that the proposed upgrade design will achieve the objectives described within the scientific justification? So there's a list of considerations there that the evaluation panel would use to judge the proposal against.
Thank you.
And this is not, again, to clarify the earlier question on in-kind contributions. You can see here in the selection section, that's when we make the best value decision and do a price and cost analysis, and that's sort of that's the area where that would enter in.
And I'd like to make a clarification on under the selection, the second paragraph. At the risk of overcomplicating matters, if a proposal is over $250,000, it will need to be approved by our funder before we can actually say we're offering you the contract. And so if it's over $250,000, the best we can do is recommend it for approval. So just letting you know that if we say we'd like to recommend you for approval, let's negotiate contract, that's why, because we need our funder's approval to actually select over $250,000. Under $250,000, we don't need their approval, but over, it just slight difference, but it just means that, you know, say you have a $400,000, we can't say we want to award you the contract. All we're doing is recommending it to the funder. I don't know if that confuses matters or not, but that's a point that needs to be clear.
So, Karen, does that mean that proposals over $250,000 will need to be routed through AURA and then NSF for approval?
Correct.
Thank you.
We can recommend, and we would approach the team to work out a contract, but it would only be a recommendation at that point. And nobody will be told this person has been selected. until this, we've got the final blessing from the powers that be.
Okay, got it.
Okay.
Any other questions? So now I pass the torch to Karen, who will explain you some important points about how to submit the proposal.
Okay. I don't have control over the presentation, so if you could just move to the next one, please.
Okay.
Basically, we try to make this as simple as possible. We have the proposal form, and it's a Word document rather than a PDF, so you can just fill it in and send it back. You don't have to recreate it. You can just fill it in, make it a PDF or whatever, but it has to be signed and sent back in. The thing to remember is just make sure you fill in all the blocks that are appropriate that apply to you. Basically require contact information, your organization type, information regarding your organizational performance. For example, question 2E, you must respond to these questions. These address your basic qualification to submit, to be considered for a quote, for consideration. If you say yes, it doesn't mean you're automatically disqualified. You just must provide explanation and we'll have to take it from there. We do screen all proposers through a whole host of organizations. We call it the SAM screening. I've never had anybody come up as being debarred or anything, but it is something we have to do. Next one, please. There is a milestone event table that we ask you to complete. That's section 3, and that's schedule milestones. That's not budget milestones. So it gives us an idea of the broad categories of tasks that you would do. A design would be one. Procuring parts, implementation, fabrication, the high level schedule issues and the proposed completion date, just to give us an idea of what your schedule will look like. And so we can start talking about and thinking about how reasonable it is. We also ask for a total proposed price. And we do, I don't know if we put it in this one, but if you have payment milestones, milestone payments you would like us to consider, submit them. We can always, that's something that is negotiable, but again, it gives us a broad idea of what type of payments schedule you'd be looking for. And you just need to answer all the questions under the budget. If it's a more complicated project, we tend to ask for very detailed budget sheets and narratives, but for this we didn't. You can do it right here in the proposal form. Just break out your personnel, your equipment, materials, supplies, contract services, and a summary. Very simple, straightforward, and of course a total. We try to make this as simple and straightforward as possible. Next slide, unless there's a question. The surety plan. This is not as scary as it looks. The surety plan is not warranty, it's not insurance. It's just how are you going to assure Aura that one, the project will be completed, and two, that any subs will be paid. As you may probably know, if you have a sub and we pay you to do a task and you don't pay the sub can then sue us. We're not going to do that. So your surety plan must address how are you going to make sure that doesn't happen? And how are you going to assure that we will be paid, that you will complete the project? This is not guaranteeing performance, because you recognize this is research. You cannot guarantee performance of the instrument. We know that. But just, you know, this is, what are you going to do to protect Aura in case you have to walk away from the project or you just don't finish the project? Does not have to be a bond. We sometimes get performance bonds. It does not have to be a performance bond. There are a list of items that could be done to address this issue, but we need some way of you assuring Aura that we're not going to be held, you know, stuck holding the bag to ensure performance and payment of subs. This is something that we've just started doing recently. We do it a lot in construction contracts. But we're starting to do it in all our contracts now, in all our proposals. So it's not as scary as it looks. Like I said, just look over the surety plan questionnaire. And if there's any questions, just submit them and we'll address them along the way. Any questions on the surety plan? Okay.
Do you have a sample surety plan that you're willing to distribute?
I'll see if I can find one.
Thank you.
Samples. And of course, everyone is going to be different. For example, I had one who recently, for the second part about subs, indicated that in their any contracts with their subs, they would put right in the contract with the sub that non-payment issues will be addressed only with the prime and not with Aura. So they're contractually bound or contractually prohibited from suing Aura for non-payment. They would only be able to go after the prime, that type of thing. But yeah, I'll pull an example for you and submit it. Any other questions on that? Okay, next. Okay, contract terms. We are not requiring you to submit the contract to your legal team and submit a red line. However, at some point, if you're going to be seriously considered, that's going to have to be done. Our strong recommendation is that you do it in advance. Sometimes legal offices can take some time on these things. And when we come to contract negotiations, we kind of like to do them relatively quickly. So if you send it to your sample contract to your legal team in advance, it gives them some more time to start thinking about what their objections are. And it gives us an idea of what type of issues we may need to be dealing with. As a practical matter, there are very few things that we can't negotiate out. But it makes it a lot cleaner and a lot faster if we have some advanced knowledge. So if you can do it and submit it with the proposal, that would be wonderful. We are not requiring it in this case, but it will need to be done at some point if you are going to be considered, seriously considered for a contract. Okay? And if that's the case, feel free to contact me or have the legal department contact me for a Word version of the sample contract.
So Karen?
Yes.
This is Scott again. Yeah. Just to clarify, I think when you mean seriously consider, once we make a selection and we start, then we'll approach you to,
yes,
to okay, we would like to start contract negotiations with you. That's not a guarantee that we'll conclude contract negotiations, but okay. That's past our selection process. Not want to go. That's at the point at which you would have to, you'd be required to let us know your objections.
Exactly.
We will consider you for the selection process. If you have or do not have the contract objections, but we will definitely need at the selection point.
Correct. So the sooner you can get it done, the better for all of us. So, any questions on that? Okay, next. I'm not even sure how many more slides we have here. Oh, you've got to sign this, the representations and certifications. That's a federal requirement. Even though we are not a federal agency, our funding is federal. So this must be submitted, and you must submit a DUNS number. Next. And before I go to questions and answers, I just want to point out that in the RFP on pages, let me pull it up, 4 and 5, actually starts a little earlier than that. Yeah, again, it's 4 or 5. There is information on how to propose, more narrative information on how to propose. Like it's going to be no more than 25 pages with the executive summary. We, uniformly paginated, font size, all that stuff, because it makes it a lot easier for the reviewers if there's a consistent format, and that helps us make sure that everything that we need to have in there is in there. And there is also in here what needs to be in the proposal itself. That is a little earlier. That is starts on page. Yeah, help me out, Stephen. Schedule of events. I'm trying to find it. I think it starts on page 3. Basically says what you need to be putting in.
Page 3 requirements.
Yeah, the content of what needs to go into the proposal. Whereas what I'm more focused on, as the contracts officer, I'm more focused on the format and the process. The content information is in the RFP. Oh, and there's one other thing. At the end of the proposal form, there is a checklist. That is provided for your assistance. That is to help you make sure that you've addressed everything. I like to advise people use it as a checklist. Did you do this? Is this here? Is this here? Is this here? Kind of like a syllabus. You know, if your students follow the syllabus on a rubric, a grading rubric, you know, oh yeah, I addressed that. Yes, I addressed that. Yes, I addressed that. No, I missed that. Oops, I got to go back and do that or I'm going to lose the points. I don't want you losing points. So if, again, that's just that's for your edification and for your use. So I know I went through it quickly, but you're all very bright people. Any questions about the proposal process, what we're going to ask you to do, what needs to be in there?
So this is Matthew Knight from Maryland.
Yeah.
On the Word document that near the top of page 4, it says RO would prefer to pay the fixed price as a single lump sum after the completion of the work. That made my business office nervous, in particular because we were potentially interested in building filters, which we'd need to pay a vendor for.
Right.
How would we handle that?
Let me see. I've got to pull that up, and I'm not sure I can get at it. Hold on. Proposal form.
So Karen, this is Scott. I think the keyword there is prefer.
Yes,
so
we would prefer.
If you can't do that, propose an alternative.
Right. That's why we say propose milestones.
Okay.
If you don't propose milestones, our default position is we'll pay when it's done.
All right.
We don't really expect you to wait that long to get paid. But we're not going to tell you what the payment milestones will be. You tell us what milestone payments your organization is comfortable with. And like I said, those can be negotiated. And I have yet to bump into a milestone schedule that I have not been able to agree to.
Thank you.
Right. This is Scott again. As long as the milestones are obviously and directly attached to the work,
exactly.
there's a correlation between the work being done and the milestone payment.
Exactly.
Then they're not an issue.
Exactly. For example, you can't say we want. It's a 12-month project. We want 10% each month plus this. that you can't, it's not progress payments. They have to be tied to either a purchase or a task or completion of something. It has to be tied to something measurable as opposed to just progress. Is that clear as mud?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions about the proposal or the process?
I have
we've addressed.
I have a question that's sort of somewhat related to purchasing, because assuming my team in Chile gets a contract and there are expensive items to be purchased, if I want to compute the price of the proposal, it's very different to use the way Gemini does the purchasing without paying anything and coming getting everything out free of taxes in Chile. That's the best option. But if I do it directly, I'll have to pay a lot in fees and custom fees and taxes. So have you considered having Gemini ordering the main components in case it's built out of the States, for instance?
We have not, but if it's proposed, we are certainly open to considering anything that makes sense.
Okay, because I have had problems with Aura in the past because of that.
Okay. I can't say yes or no without seeing the actual proposal, but we try to be reasonable and open.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm suggesting is that the Aura, that you do the place the orders and then deliver the components to the team.
So Dan, is that Danny speaking?
Yes.
Hi, Danny. It's Stephen Goodson again. So we have done stuff like that in the past. So it is possible, and we would have to look at the exact details of what was being requested. But I don't think that it by itself it's a showstopper.
Yeah. Okay. It's a lot of money that has to be considered in the proposal if it's not in that way.
Okay, I understand. Right.
And so this is Scott. I one more clarification. Some things that we'll be looking at is, one, you've already mentioned the demonstration that this makes sense, this is valuable, this is, you know, a sensible way to go for the project. And two, we'd want to minimize the Gemini resources or resources necessary to complete that. And so those are the kinds of things you'd want to include in your suggestions.
Okay.
Address those issues.
Okay. Any other questions? Oh, one thing I did want to mention, I made a note here. We, the very beginning of the presentation, we said that the contract negotiations are anticipated to start in February. That is subject to change. It's going to depend on the value of the contract. If it's a large value contract that needs to get approval, it may take a little longer. So if you don't get a call on February 2nd saying we'd like to negotiate a contract, don't assume that that means you're not being considered. That actual contract negotiation date is subject to slippage. And well, actually, most of the dates are, except for the due date. That one's cast in stone.
So I have some questions about access to technical information. What's the process for requesting technical information? So we will want to get access to, you know, optical and mechanical drawings of systems and components. Do we just make a public request for sort of a qualitative description of the information that we want, or do we get access to a drawing list and then we can ask for specific drawings or a document list, either by perusing DocuShare or asking you to list out the documents for a particular instrument?
After you write to our formal address requesting the technical information, we are going to contact our instrument scientists or engineers and we will provide you with all the information that you request.
Within our ability to do so.
Yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like a qualitative description of the information that we want is appropriate, and we just go through the formal request process. And I assume that all those requests will be published so that all proposers will see or are able to see information requested by other proposers.
Karen?
We'll have to think about that one.
If you're asking for technical information, this is Scott again. It's not clear to me. I'll defer to our contracting people, Karen. But it's not clear to me that that's something that we need to share with everybody. That someone asked for a drawing of GMOS. Someone asked for a drawing of Flamingos 2. I don't think that's really going to have a competitive. You know, we'll provide the technical information that we can when requested. So, Karen, is that something we need to make?
Yeah, I would. I'm a little reluctant to say, oh yeah, we'll publish it, because we don't share information among all the proposers about what others are doing. We have to keep that information confidential. But if the situation comes up, we'll address it at that point.
Well, my preference, of course, is that that information not be shared.
Mine too.
But so that's the gist of my question, whether you're contractually obligated to share those questions.
Yeah, so Scott here again, Andy. I think the difference is, if you're asking something about the terms of the RFP, the selection process, the requirements, then yes, any clarification we make, anything we say, that's gonna go to everybody. But we're talking here about technical information about our instruments to support your proposal. If we have it and we can get it, we will provide for everybody who asks. So that's the level playing field aspect in that area. There's no, if you're working on a GMOS project, someone's working on a GNRS project, there's no reason to give the information to the other team. So I think the difference is, unless Karen thinks about it further and decides that we need to make it public, my inclination would be the technical information, you request it through our RFP IUP email address, and then we will, work the best way we can to assign you an engineer or a scientist to help with that information.
And that would be my default position also.
So do you have an expected or at least target turnaround time for providing information? Mm-hmm. Information?
Depends on what to ask for.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
We try to be responsive. If somebody's asking for something very complex, it's going to take longer. But we do try to be responsive relatively quickly. Anybody else have any questions? I'll say, if you think of any afterwards, feel free to send them to the RFP, IUP email. And we'll deal with it as expeditiously as possible. Does anybody on the team have anything else to add?
If somebody is trying to ask something while Larry was making the question.
I started to ask something, but I think I got the answer from what's been discussed, so I'm fine.
Okay.
Scott, maybe?
I'm pleased with the interest here. Thank you very much for your time and for your interest in helping us with this program. This is a relatively new program, as Ruben said. We launched one project as a result of last year's RFP. We're increasing the amount of money available this time, expanding our scope a little bit, and we tried to simplify the process to make it a little bit easier to apply. So we hope that's all worked, and you know, we're willing to listen to feedback on the process as well as your great ideas going forward.
So this is Stephen. So just one last thing is, if you are looking for a team to collaborate with, please send us information and we'll host it on our webpage. If you have any questions, then ask and we'll find the answer, and we will populate the frequently asked questions or questions and answers page. If you haven't already added yourself to the distribution email list, please contact us and we'll add you to the list. And if you have any questions, then please ask. The more questions you ask, then hopefully, you know, the stronger proposals that we'll get. So I think those are the main things. If there is something that is slightly outside the scope of the IU RFP, there's other web pages that are appropriate, and Gemini receive unsolicited proposals, so that's something else. But for the IU RFP and the call, I think those are the main things.
Sounds like that might be a wrap.
Thank you to everyone. And we look forward to see your proposals.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We look forward to reading your proposals.
Thank you.